Hey everyone, I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Hello and welcome to episode 4 of Stage 9, Trek FM's show about the people who make Star Trek. I'm Mike.
I'm John.
And today we have some sad news to discuss, and that is the passing of Anton Yelchin, who played Chekhov in the most recent movies, the Abramsverse movies, Star Trek, Star Trek Into Darkness, and the upcoming Star Trek Beyond. He passed away on Sunday, and we thought that we should take a look at his work both in Star Trek and outside of Star Trek, look at his career on the whole. And to help us with that is Adam Drozin. How's it going, Adam?
Hey, guys. Glad to be here. Wish it was under better circumstances, but ready to celebrate this amazing man's career.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. We do appreciate it because, you know, there are definitely some gaps in our Yelchin viewing, just like, you know, with everyone, I'm sure, because he's done a lot of stuff, like 56 things or something like that. So we're going to talk about his work on Star Trek and then focus on three movies in particular to discuss from outside of the franchise. But before we do that, let's talk about his Star Trek stuff. So, yes, he was in J.J. Abrams' Star Trek in 2009, as well as Into Darkness and Star Trek Beyond, playing a younger version of Chekhov. He was, I believe, 19 years old when he made the first movie, and you know he was playing a 17-year-old Chekhov. So, Adam, what do you think about his portrayal of Chekhov in the new movies?
Spot on. We're just so strong. He was really young when he made that film. He was only 2 months older than I am, so it really did hit me kind of hard to hear of his passing, just because he was so close in age. But, you know, when I first saw this movie, I was not a Star Trek fan. It just kind of played to me as, you know, standard summer blockbuster. But then when I revisited it upon becoming a fan, I really was struck by how strong his performance was. I think when I first saw it, and I wasn't aware of the legacy left to him by Walter Koenig, I was kind of like, oh yeah, he's got a really shticky Russian accent. I can do that. And that's great. It's a really funny scene. And now having gone back and watched all of TOS and the TOS movies, it does seem like they kind of gravitated towards this nuclear Wessels kind of silly pronunciation thing as the key Chekhov thing to zone in on. But just so much humanity and warmth, and you can't help but root for the guy when you see him doing his thing. And I think that's sort of a hallmark of his work throughout different movies. You can't help but relate to him and want to see his character succeed. So I absolutely was taken with his performance in those films.
What do you think, John?
I think that's spot on, Adam. I think that what he really captures in his performances. And I'm not a huge fan of Into Darkness, but I did really love 09. I think to add on to what you're saying is he embodies, his energy really embodies in those two movies, the sense, just sort of like that bright, optimistic, like seeker that you would expect to find on an exploration vessel. I think that he, of all of the actors, brings the most kinetic energy that speaks of, you know, the vibrancy and the youth and the desire to get out there into the world and find out what's going on. Like, yeah, there's comedy to the way he does the accent and everything like that. But to reference something you mentioned, Adam, the I can do this, right? Like, you believe him. You believe, even though they've got that shticky bit, you believe him. You believe he's in that moment, that excited kid that figures out, oh, I can figure this out. I can do this. And even when he's, you know, relegated to engineering and Into Darkness, like that's, you know, some of the best character action in Into Darkness is him sort of being that fish out of water, but not saying anything negative, not giving up, like continuing to work, saying, okay, this is what I got to do. So Yeah, I thought he brings a great energy to those films.
Yeah, you know, on Sunday morning, I was actually in a screening of Star Trek Into Darkness. And, you know, when I came out of the screening, I checked my phone and there were all these alerts and everything saying that Yelchin had passed away. And it was really kind of just, you know, striking in that moment, because he does bring like a lot of joy and everything to those movies, you know. And I mean, like, I remember, like, when we were watching, I was sitting there watching it with my wife, and like there's the moment where he is, you know, promoted to chief engineer or whatever, and, you know, Kirk says, go put on a red shirt, and he has this look on his face like, oh no, you know, and, you know, that kind of thing. And, you know, we, you know, kind of turned to each other in that moment and, you know, had a little chuckle and stuff like that. And you know, you guys are right that he did really sort of embrace the youthfulness of the character of Chekhov, which is something which I think is kind of forgotten about in a lot of ways, because the character has been around for so long. You know, we remember him from the movies and everything like that, and he had sort of outgrown that thing that he was when he was first introduced. Like, the original intention of that character was to be, you know, sort of like, you know, the Robin of Star Trek or whatever, you know. And here, you know, we get that again through Yelchin's portrayal, and I think it is really effective. And, you know, there is so much enthusiasm there, and he brings so much enthusiasm to those movies, you know, to walk out of that movie, and I like Into Darkness a whole bunch, you know, to walk out of that movie sort of on a high from just, you know, seeing it on the big screen and everything, and then to immediately, you know, be struck with this news, it, you know, was just kind of like a gut punch, you know. It's very, very sad. Yeah. But yeah, I really do love him in these movies. And I was skeptical about the inclusion of Chekhov in these movies to begin with, because, you know, the nerd in me is like, that doesn't make any sense, because he would only be 13 years old at this point in the timeline. And, you know, so whatever. But Yelchin made me forget all that and just sort of embrace the character. And I do like how they sort of put him in a different place in Into Darkness and give him something different to deal with. I think that was pretty cool. Okay, so moving outside of Star Trek, in that same summer of 2009 that Star Trek came out, Yelchin also portrayed a younger version in the same continuity of another iconic science fiction character, and that's Kyle Reese from the Terminator films, specifically in Terminator Salvation. Now, I know that there's a number of opinions about this movie. but, Adam, what did you think about Terminator Salvation, just in general?
On the whole, I'm probably more positive than most people on that film. I know you said there's a lot of opinions, most of them negative. But I think for me, it was all about context. I saw that film for the first time. I can picture myself watching it in a hotel room in Orlando, Florida in December of 2011. And if there's any movie that gives off a hotel room vibe, it's that movie. It's not, you know, it just seems like the kind of movie that's always going to be in repeats. And I do like it. I think it's cool for a couple reasons. T1 and T2, obviously, all-time classics, amazing. T3, I'm also more positive. Mike, I know you're a big fan of that one, but again, not. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just, sorry. No, sorry. Involuntary. What? But go on. Go on.
Honestly, having podcasted with this guy for so long, like, there's a certain type of movie that Mike Schindler likes to champion, and I think T3 fits pretty squarely in that category. But moving on, T3 is cool, and I like that more than most as well. And then, you know, we'll just skip past Salvation for a minute, get to Genesis, which came out last summer. And I honestly thought, whatever, you know. But the thing about those four movies in the Terminator franchise, 1, 2, 3, and 5, is they all kind of have the same plot. They all kind of revolve around the same plot beats of moving back in time to stop this thing, to start this thing. And that's kind of the idea, this recursive sort of loop pattern that they keep falling into. And they comment a little bit on it in Genesis. But what I do like about 4 is it really does, Salvation, the one that Anton's in, it really does feel the most outside of that sort of context. It's the most distinct in terms of the visuals and the plot points of all the Terminator movies. And I think it deserves a little credit for that. I think a lot of people dismiss it on face value because it's directed by Mick G. And I think that he would honestly get a little bit more credit if he didn't decide in the late 90s, early 2000s to call himself Mick G instead of Joseph McGinty. But that's neither here nor there. I do think Anton brings a really, you know, strong vibe to this film. It's a pretty, you know, all the Terminator movies, gritty, down, dirty, kind of mean, kind of not that friendly. T2 gets a little bit more friendly. But again, you know, like I said, regarding his performances, Chekhov, there's something about this guy when he's on screen. You just want to root for him. You just want to, you just can't help but relate to him and want to see him succeed. So I think he certainly brought a warmth and a personality to that movie that if he wasn't in that movie, or if he didn't get that actor, I think it would have been not quite as good as it is. So yeah, I like that movie and I like him in it quite a bit.
What about you, John?
Well, far be it from me to argue Terminator 3 with the two of you, but Terminator Salvation, I remember seeing that in the theater. You know, we were sitting there and we walked out of the movie theater, and I still have this opinion of the movie, which is, you know, it wasn't bad, but it wasn't good. Like, it was there. Okay. Now, that aside, it was the first performance by Anton Yelchin that I ever saw. And I remember specifically walking out of the theater, and we're sitting there, we're saying, yeah, this was kind of good, this was kind of bad. What'd you think of the guy who played Reese? You know, he was good. I liked him, you know. And so I've always regarded him in the context of that movie as one of the positives, one of the bright shining parts of everything. Whatever other issues I had with it, I liked him. I do agree with the statement that if he wasn't in it, the movie is not as successful, however you're going to define that. So I definitely think he brought something better to Terminator Salvation. And, you know, while the movie is at best tolerably mediocre to me, he's good. He's very good in that movie, and I liked him.
Yeah, you know, I don't understand the hate for Terminator Salvation, and certainly I've heard all the arguments against it and everything like that. And you know, I think that Adam is right in that a lot of people dislike Mick G movies because his name is Mick G and he's an easy he's an easy target, you know. And how many times have you heard, like, who's that movie directed by? And you say Mick G, and you're like, Mick G is directing a Terminator movie? And, you know, you can take that as, you know, from numerous ways. You could be like, the guy who made all those, you know, Smash Mouth videos is directing a Terminator movie. Or you can take it as, you know, the guy's name is Mick G. And I think there really is something to that. I really do, you know. I love Mick G. I absolutely love Charlie's Angels. I thought that thing was amazing.
I agree with you. The first one's good.
I like the second one a lot, too. I really love the second one. I know that people don't, but I love it.
Anytime you can watch Crispin Glover for 5 minutes, I could watch Crispin Glover read the phone book. The fact that he's in a Charlie's Angels movie, yeah, I'm going to watch that.
He's in two Charlie's Angels movies, which is even better. Yeah, he's so awesome as Creepy Thin Man. You know, I mean, yeah, those movies are great. For the first one in particular, though, yeah, I mean, that movie holds up extremely well. It's so good. And, you know, I like his music videos. I like even, like, things like We Are Marshall, I think, are great. And Terminator Salvation was, like, a huge departure for him in a lot of ways. You know, and you could tell, yeah, okay, he definitely watched Children of Men, like, 15 times before making this movie. But that doesn't mean that he did a bad job with it at all. I think that, you know, the stuff that he was doing in there was really cool. And, you know, he got some really good performances out of the actors, you know, even though it may have been a little contentious at times. But, you know, regardless of that, you know, Anton Yelchin's performance in that movie, I think, is really strong. And Kyle Reese is a character who is iconic. You know, Christian Bale playing, you know, John Connor, that's kind of a different scenario because basically it's an extension of what we've seen before. And, you know, prior to this, we've seen, you know, him as a little kid. And then, you know, you could say, well, there was, you know, Terminator 3. But, you know, I don't think that Christian Bale was too concerned with that in terms of the continuity. I mean, people are going to be looking back at the iconic performance from Terminator 2, and that's, you know, a different thing that Christian Bale is doing. But Yelchin had, I think, the much harder job in terms of the continuity, in that we all know Michael Biehn from the first movie, and, you know, trying to capture that but younger is a lot harder to do. And I think he did a great job. You know, again, the sort of like youthful exuberance and all that stuff, but at the same time, like, this guy trying to figure out what he's doing and believing that one day he would become the person who we see in the first Terminator movie. I thought that he did a fantastic job with that. I totally bought it. I'm like, this is totally, you know, little kid Kyle Reese. You know, I completely buy it. And I remember, you know, I saw it, you know, in the theater as well. And I remember, like, really thinking about, like, wow, this guy, you know, Anton Yelchin, who I've only seen in a few things, you know, up until now, has successfully reinvigorated two iconic characters in the same summer, like within months of each other. And I was just like, wow, that's really hard to do and really impressive that he was able to do it. And it's not like Chekhov is the Kyle Reese of the Star Trek universe or anything like that. You know, I mean, they're two very different characters, and yet he pulled off both, you know, exceedingly well. And yeah, Terminator Salvation is great. In fact, you know, I'm just going to throw this out there. I'm going to throw it out there because why not?
Don't do it.
I'm going to say that Terminator Salvation is the second best Terminator movie.
That's, oh, no.
So this has been stage 9.
Yeah, don't derail this. Don't derail this. Let's all just agree that Anton Yelchin was one of the bright points of Terminator Salvation and left a great impression. And I think you're right, Mike. Like, to pull off the reinvigoration of two classic sci-fi characters, you know, in the same year is just amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
I'm on board with that.
All right, so let's take it back a few years to, I believe, 2005. Might be early 2006, I forget. And let's look at one of Yelchin's earlier performances in the movie Alpha Dog, which was directed by Nick Cassavetes. Now, Adam, you haven't seen this movie, right?
I have not seen this movie. I'll just comment briefly on a few things I do know about it. Nick Cassavetes, of course, son of John Cassavetes, one of the great all-time American independent filmmakers, one of my favorites, and an actor in his own right. You've probably seen him most notably in Rosemary's Baby. Again, one of the greatest movies ever made, but I digress. So Nick Cassavetes has made some cool movies, some pretty good stuff. I know right off the top of my head, he did that movie John Q with Denzel just probably a few years before this Alpha Dog.
He also very noteworthy, probably was the director of The Notebook. But if you're looking for a Notebook type of movie, Alpha Dog, probably not a good choice.
Yeah, we would want to steer you clear of that one. You know, this is nothing like The Notebook.
But it is extremely good. Well, it's very good. Let's temper my it's no Terminator Salvation, but
oh, jeez. Oh, come on.
No,
you're right. It's better than Terminator Salvation, hands down.
It's a very good movie. It's the plot, I mean, it's very tough to watch, especially now, you know, but the plot of the movie, which is based on a true story where basically, like, Emil Hirsch is like a sort of small-time drug dealer, and this guy owes him money, and his thugs essentially sort of on a whim decide that they can kidnap the younger brother of the guy who owes him money and basically hold him hostage until they get their money back. And the younger brother is played by, you know, Anton Yelchin, who was, like, you know, probably like 15 at the time, something around there. And it's basically this story about how, you know, they kidnap this kid, but they never really consider it to be kidnapping. You know, they have him like locked away in a house, but they're just hanging out with him, and he's having the time of his life because his brother's, you know, older friends are paying attention to him, and you know, he's basically going along with it, completely oblivious to the fact that he's in an extremely dangerous situation. And as everyone involved starts realizing the severity of the situation, things get really, really intense and really, really dark. And it's very good, but it's very hard to watch to begin with. And, you know, now, you know, that Yelchin has passed away, I can only imagine that it would be extremely hard to watch.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he definitely does exert that sort of youthful exuberance that we've been talking about in these other movies. And that's kind of the heart of this character. He is completely innocent and the nicest, most likable character, probably the only real likable character in the entire movie. And he is the one who basically gets taken advantage of throughout the entire thing from the very beginning. You know, he is not the alpha dog in the title, and he's the opposite of that. And this one kid who's just nice and trying to help everyone out, really, his brother, his kidnappers, everyone, he just wants everyone to be happy. And he's the one who in the end loses. You know, he's the big loser.
Like, what caught most everybody off guard performance-wise in Alpha Dog was Justin Timberlake was really good in it.
Oh, yeah. And he's excellent.
But it blindsided everybody because everybody was like, oh, Justin Timberlake, what's going to... And you watch the movie and you're like, oh, wow. Oh, wow. He's actually a good actor.
Mm-hmm.
But Yelchin still manages to, rightfully so, steal the show because I think you're right. He plays the one character, and I think it's his natural energy that helps it. He plays the one character that's genuinely likable. So I don't really have anything to add, but you're absolutely right. Like, he plays the one character in the entire movie where he really connects with you as an audience member. I if anybody has not seen Alpha Dog, I strongly encourage them to.
Yeah, it's definitely an ensemble piece that kind of goes everywhere, but I would say if you had to pick a main character, it would be Timberlake. And a lot of Timberlake's scenes are interacting with Yelchin. There's a lot of, probably more of the two of them together than anyone else. And, you know, they're both really, really good. And, yeah, I mean, Adam, I think I have a pretty good idea of the types of movies that you like and that kind of thing. And I think that you would like Alpha Dog quite a bit, I have to say.
So, sounds good.
Yeah, definitely check it out. Okay, so now there's another movie which Yelchin just had come out, which has sort of blown up in recent months, and I feel really bad for not having seen it because I've been meaning to see it forever. I've heard the ending from outside of a movie theater while sitting in the lobby waiting for like four other movies. So like four times I've heard this ending, and I just never got around to seeing the movie. And now, of course, it's out of theaters and won't be out on video until next week. So, you know, of course, that's how it works. But that movie is Green Room. Now, Adam, you have seen this movie.
Seen it, loved it. One of my favorites of the year so far, easily.
All right, so what can you tell us about Green Room?
Green Room is the second feature film by a director named Jeremy Saulnier. I believe that's how he pronounced his name. He did a movie a couple years ago, which got a lot of buzz as well. It was called Blue Ruin. And he shot that himself. He was his own cinematographer. And he started as a cinematographer, most notably for another director named Matt Porterfield. But this was his first film, and he got a lot of buzz off that. And then Blue Ruin enabled him to make this film, Green Room. And basically the plot is following a band from John's neck of the woods, D.C. area, called the Ain't Rights. And they're a local punk band. And it basically starts with them giving an interview to a college newspaper And at the end of it, the guy says, hey, I know I was supposed to get you guys a gig, but it fell through. And they sort of coerce him into getting them another gig. And so they're at this gig where they're not supposed to be, in the middle of nowhere, somewhere on the East Coast. And they play their set, and they're a punk band, really aggressive. And they go back to the green room to get their stuff and get out of there. And as Anton Yelkin walks into the room to get his iPhone, which he was told, you know, just get out of here, you know, get your stuff all in the hall. He's like, no, I forgot my phone. He walks in and he finds a girl on the floor with a knife in her head. So at that point, no one in Anton's band is allowed to leave. And it's just this really tense pressure cooker of, you know, one by one, the band starting to realize that, you know, not only is this the local neo-Nazi headquarters, this hangout, but that none of them in all likelihood is going to get out of this alive. And you know, I know you've heard the ending quite a few times, but I gotta say, I really don't. The second you start watching this movie, it's not going to matter. It's just such an amazingly tense pressure cooker. And the villain, the leader of the neo-Nazis, is played by none other than Sir Patrick Stewart, and one of his most distinctive roles, for truly just being he's unlike anything you've seen him in prior to this. And he is so good. Yelkin is so good. Truly the first thing, you know, once I registered, wow, he's really gone. He was so good in Green Room this year. It really does, just having only seen it once, I can't wait to watch it again when it's on video next week. It really does strike me as his most developed performance. He's truly the lead of this movie, and he's very much in a similar vein to what we've discussed before. He's not exuberant per se. No one in this film could truly be considered that, but you see this guy, and he seems so out of place in the punk realm. He looks like Anton Yelkin. He doesn't have any tattoos. He's not a skinhead. He's none of that. But you can see just the way he speaks and the way he looks at things. He's processing, and there's a life and a mind that is actively at work here. And you instantly connect with this guy. I won't spoil anything, but there's one scene that I thought was really, really striking, you know, when he is doing mostly nonverbal work here, is when he, you know, they confront him in the green room, and they know that he knows that there's a dead girl on the floor. The guy walks up to him, Anton Yelkin, the killer, walks up to him. He says, you just played, right? Yeah. What was the name of that third song he played? And he says something like Toxic Radiation, some weird like punk names as well. Okay. That was heavy. That was super heavy. That's what I killed her to. And just the look on Yelkin's face as he says that, oh, indelible. Guys, you have to see Green Room. The second it's on VOD. What a movie. Loved it. Can't recommend it enough.
Wow. Yeah, I've been wanting to see it, you know, forever. I think you might have been the first person who I saw on Twitter or something say like, hey, check out this movie, it's crazy. And you know, I had seen like the posters and stuff, and the Music Box here in Chicago, which is a theater which I frequent rather regularly, was playing it for like 6 weeks or something, and then it left, and then it came back, and like it was just like last week that they finally got rid of it. And I just never got around to it. I think the thing that was kind of holding me up was I've never seen Blue Ruin, and people were like, oh well, this is, you know, the spiritual sequel, it's the second in his, you know, color trilogy or something like that. And you know,
it's so much better yeah, than Blue Ruin by leaps and bounds, I think.
Well, I mean, regardless, like the completist in me is just like, well, I need to watch Blue Ruin before I see Green Room, and I just never got around to it. But now I'm going to watch both of them, like you say, as soon as it comes out. It comes out June 28th. So okay, so we're talking, yes, on Tuesday from after this is released. This is when you'll be able to get it on iTunes, and yeah, I'm definitely going to check it out because it sounds really cool. Before we go, you know, these are just three movies that Yelchin did, and he's had a very, very prolific career, considering the fact that, you know, he's only 27 years old. So let's each pick one movie that we didn't talk about that we can recommend people check out. John, what do you have?
I'll throw Running with Scissors, which is based on the memoir by Augustin Burroughs. I'm highly skeptical about the accuracy of anything called a memoir in the post-James Frey era. But I will say that the movie itself is highly entertaining. Yelchin is great. For me to praise a movie that has Gwyneth Paltrow in it, if you know anything about me, that means the movie must be really good, because I don't care for Gwyneth Paltrow as an actress too much. But it also has the absolutely tremendous Brian Cox in it, who's always wonderful to watch. But it's well worth seeing. It's witty. It's and Yelchin's performance is great. Not to repeat anything that we've said, but he brings a vitality to it that makes you want to keep watching. Even for any missteps that go along through the film, Yelchin keeps you in there. And so I highly recommend that if you haven't seen Running with Scissors.
What about you, Adam?
Only Lovers Left Alive by a director named Jim Jarmusch, who's probably most known for his film Cigarettes and Coffee, as well as Down by Law, Strange Paradise. So many good, such an iconic New York City independent director. This is one of his more recent films, and it's one of the most different, I would say, vampire films that you could see. So if you're interested in vampires but are kind of feeling burnt out on the whole genre, because I think it did burn itself out pretty quick, this is a really low-key, sort of artsy, not quite a vampire movie, but definitely a vampire movie. And basically, Anton Yelchin plays a young musician who's very enamored with this mysterious, reclusive musician played by Tom Hiddleston, who is actually a vampire who is centuries years old and is currently living in a derelict building in Detroit, and is nurturing a long-distance relationship with his fellow musician, lover, vampire of centuries, played by Tilda Swinton. So they play the main characters, along with Mia Wasikowska, who plays a love interest to Anton. And it is such an interesting, strange, dark, weird, funny, I can't, it's a very hard movie to pin down, but if you're interested in something a little offbeat and a little off kilter, very well worth your time. And if any of those actors strike your fancy, which there's, it's a really solid cast, in addition to Jeffrey Wright, who plays a doctor as Tom Hiddleston's blood dealer, fascinating film, great Yelchin performance, Only Lovers Left Alive, check it out.
Well, my recommendation is also a vampire movie, probably a little bit different, but it's Fright Night, the remake from 2011, which was directed by Craig Gillespie, the guy who did Finest Hours, and written by Marty Noxon of Buffy the Vampire Slayer fame. And it stars Yelchin along with Colin Farrell, David Tennant, Tony Collette. And this is a movie which... I've never seen the original, I have to say. I never saw the original. But this movie is a lot of fun. You know, I think a lot of these movies that we've been talking about are really heavy, you know, dark. You know, certainly it sounds like Green Room is, Alpha Dog for sure. Even Terminator Salvation, you know, is definitely, it's post-apocalyptic, you know. But yeah. this one is a comedy, essentially. And it's basically, for those people who don't know, about a kid who thinks that his next-door neighbor is a vampire, Colin Farrell. You know, Yelchin is the kid, Colin Farrell is the apparent vampire, and it's a lot of fun, I have to say. You know, it's very funny, you know, the dialogue and everything is very witty. Yelchin's performance is great, as is Colin Farrell's, in a very sort of like strange role. There's some cool people who pop up here and there, like Tennant, who are very good. And the other thing which I will say about it is it was shot in 3D, and the 3D is fantastic. Like, some of the best 3D I've ever seen in a movie. So go check out the 3D version and give it a shot. It's a lot of fun. Have you guys seen it? John, you've seen it, right?
I did. I saw it in 3D in the movie theater, and it's tough to shake off how much I loved the original. Mm-hmm. Because they definitely update it to be for more modern audiences, with the whole, you know, they're less willing to go down the spiritual vampire route and go with the more scientific vampire route, as is typical. I think that it's great and compelling until a certain point. And I will agree with you that while I normally revile 3D movies, I did not revile the 3D in this one. Therefore, probably by, you know, any measure of respect for me, the 3D is pretty good.
Did you see it, Adam?
I did see it. I liked it. Like John, I'm a big fan of the original. I wouldn't even say I'm a big fan because I didn't really grow up with it. And I feel like Fright Night 1985 is kind of one of those movies where if you're a teenager or you're younger when you first see it, those are the people who really bond with it. But I like it quite a bit. It really does have that mid-80s horror comedy vibe. And I related a lot in my mind with the film Monster Squad, written yes. by Fred Decker, who also did Enterprise and the RoboCop sequels. And no, it's pretty good. And again, Anton's really good. Colin Farrell's got a really cool vibe going on. And I would recommend that one too. And I'd also recommend checking out the original.
Yeah.
All right. Well, what are your favorite Anton Yelchin performances? You know, we want to hear, you know, what you have to say, because like we keep on saying, he's done a ton of stuff, you know, usually in supporting roles, you know, things like that, things which are, you know, under the radar, I think, to a lot of people, but, you know, he's very prolific and has done quite a bit of work. And we want to hear what you have to say about him. So, you know, you can email us at comtrackstars@gmail.com. And, you know, we can share your picks next week. All right. Well, I guess we can wrap this up. We want to thank our associate producer, Jeff Sutter, who's been with us since the very beginning, and also our brand new associate producer, Chris Steftenagel. Welcome aboard, and thank you very much for your support. Adam, thank you very much for jumping on here and joining us, you know, for this podcast. I wish it were under better circumstances, but it was great hearing about Green Room, and we definitely have to check that out soon.
As soon as possible, guys. Green Room, absolutely one of my favorites of the year, and I think what'll turn out to be one of the definitive Anton performances for sure. So, and if you guys love Patrick Stewart, which if you're listening to Trek FM, I'm sure you do, you need to see this movie as soon as possible. But it was great, you know, being on Stage 9. I'm loving the new show, guys. And anytime you want to talk about cinematographers, you know who to talk to. So love being here, and can't wait to come back and chat with you guys again.
Absolutely, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, thanks again for joining us, Adam. Next week, you know, I know that we promised you that we'd be talking about the City on the Edge of Forever audiobook this week, but, you know, unfortunately we weren't able to do that, but we will definitely get to it next week. So we'll see you all then.